next argument is in the case of Yovanko versus Axelrod, 14-13 from 2008. Mr. Zara, I'd like to begin as soon as you can be ready.
Yes, thank you.
Good morning. Please whip seat.
May it please the court, my name is Ramon Pizarro. I am the attorney for Mr. Kovac and Mr. Tomalinian. This interference pertains has to do with a very simple device. It's a detector that collapses. But as we have explained in the briefs, this thing should never have really proceeded to the extent that it did. Initially, the junior party asked the Board of Patent Appeals to that it was the senior party and therefore was entitled to advance under the presumption that it was allowed as being a senior party. In fact, it was not a senior party. And because of that, it had to show that it had that it would prevail in the interference before the interference would even start. The administrative law judge in this case said, well, it was not entirely unreasonable for it to think that it was a senior party when in fact it was the junior party. But the decision as to whether it could call itself the junior party or the senior party was based on the teachings or the disclosures in its own applications. And therefore, it just not understood as to why it would not be totally unreasonable to be incorrect about that.
So your whole argument here is based on the fact that you think that this did not satisfy what good cause standard under the regulation?
I'm sorry?
You're saying that it did not, what Axelrod came up with did not to satisfy the good cause standard that the board was required to follow?
For two reasons. To proceed with the interference, and number two, to allow Axelrod to submit new evidence, because everything that was submitted in order to allow the interference to go forward was new evidence. It was affidavits and everything that were created after the show cause order was initially.
What is the standard of review?
That would be an abuse of discretion, I believe, or that there would be that the agencies did not follow its own rules.
I don't understand your argument. Are you saying that there was no legitimate interference, that the declaration of an interference was legally deficient, and therefore the entire proceeding is a nullity?
No, Your Honor.
What is your argument?
Well, there's two arguments here. Number one, the obviousness issue that I'd like to address in a little bit.
You keep talking about how they shouldn't have proceeded. I'm trying to understand, well, why not?
Well, because they didn't meet their initial burden of showing that they would succeed on the interference. They should have shown that they were onto this invention because they were the junior party, that they should have shown that they actually reduction to practice before Ivanka's constructive reduction to practice. And in their initial submissions, they did not have that at all.
So yours is a process argument that they shouldn't have given them a second bite.
That's true. They got a second bite when the law.
So what should have happened? It should have been terminated in midstream?
No, at the beginning, at the initial stages. The rule says that the judge is allowed to announce an interference, and for the purpose of getting them to show good cause as to why they should be allowed to either introduce new evidence or as to why perhaps there was some error in there in the conclusion that they did not show that they could prevail on the interference based on their initial filings.
And how does that entitle you to a reversal?
Well, the thing is that the obviousness issues were raised sua sponte by the board, But the board can look at these things, provided that they're properly before the, for it. Secondly, I do believe that the obviousness analysis was not based on the claims. It was based on what...
You seem to be saying they couldn't legitimately do any obviousness analysis.
That's correct. Because it, as long as it was properly before it, I mean, it's almost like if the board could actually just look at any patent, grab them at random, just because it has the authority to read, to take a second look at these things, it can just do that willy-nilly. The rules are set out so that...
I don't understand why you're saying it's willy-nilly.
I'm sorry. At a random, just at its own, in a random fashion.
Well, I don't understand that either. What do you mean, random fashion?
Well, without proper, with the evidence, without the, meeting the standards that's set out in the rules. If you don't follow the rules, then it can become like a random type of... If you don't stay within the rules, then you don't know where the boundaries
are. But you say the issue wasn't before them, or the evidence wasn't proper? That the issue was not properly before the board, or the evidence with regard to that issue was not properly?
Well, there was no evidence before the board because... well, the issue had to have been before the board because that is one of the requirements that are that's set forth in before the interference can even start. That they must show.
So, maybe you're saying that the issue was not properly before the board. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, well, the board did not have the authority to keep going forward because there wasn't enough. They did not meet provide the evidence to show that they would succeed on the interference.
Suppose you have a case where it's absolutely unclear who the senior party is and who the junior party is, but it's very clear that both inventions would have been obvious. As I understand your argument, the patent office would be absolutely precluded from making findings of obviousness in that case.
Not the patent office. I think the board is.
I'm talking about the board.
Okay.
The
board. I mean, the question is, as I read the rules, the board has authority to look at things, so long as the rules are followed. I mean, the board can't. At least, as far as I know.
I thought the authority of the board to conduct interferences came from the statute.
Right.
The rule isn't the source of the jurisdiction of the board to adjudicate interferences. Now, they have some procedural rules, and it may be that some of them, if they're not followed, could taint the proceeding. But it's not a question of their authority. Their authority comes from the statute
and
the case law.
Right, right. And the case law says that before they can move forward, they need to show, they need to have... The person that's trying to revoke the interference needs to meet certain procedural safeguards to make sure that these things don't go on, that patentees aren't exposed to harassment and that sort of thing. And that was not observed at all in this case. And then you get into the question of, well, was the into the, whether the obviousness was properly gauged. Those are two separate issues, I think. And then as far as the obviousness issue, they did not focus on the claims at all at the beginning.
You may be getting right to this, which is that a lot of us complained about what we're
sure.
The obviousness is based on the fact that they use for shorthand for whatever purpose the term farm-like structure.
Sure.
Farm-like shape.
Right.
Is there a pet carrier that one can draw from reading the claim one that is other than a barn-like shape? I guess I'm not clear on why you're taking such issue with that.
Well,
you say that that's wrong, that the claims could lead you to something other than a barn-like shape?
Other than a barn? Well, that's the thing. Definition of what is a barn-like shape comes from looking at the invention. And that's clearly hindsight. What is a barn-like shape? If you go to a farm and you look at nowadays and you look at what a barn is, a barn, you may see something that's dome shaped. And so, what is a barn like shape? And I did think, I've thought a lot about it every time I see a barn. Is that a barn like shape?
The patents and the application in this interference had lots of drawings.
Yes.
So, is it really likely that the board was totally confused about what's covered by these two purported inventions?
No, no, but I think in the terms
of... It sounds to me like you just don't like the way they articulated it in their opinion, which isn't a basis of reversal. We have all sorts of case law saying we don't review opinions, we review judgments and final decisions.
Well, the question of what is
obvious... You're not entitled to a reversal because somebody was careless in the phraseology of an opinion.
Well, the thing is that the phraseology should have shown that the claimed invention was...
Even if I were to agree with you that the phraseology should have been different and better, how does that entitle you to reversal?
Well, because the evidence that they used does not suggest this making this kind of the claimed invention. Even if, because Dr. Shina's testimony said works backwards from what we had. And he doesn't say that somebody with ordinary skill in the art would be a suggestion to incorporate that over 180 degree folding based on those things. He says that you can do it, but he doesn't say that if you start with Beard.
I read his testimony as suggesting that not only is it possible, but it's readily apparent. Because it's such a simple mechanical art, and the hinges and separate portions of the side walls are well known in the art.
Well, that's readily apparent, but the question is, would you combine these two things? Would it be combinable? Would somebody with ordinary skill in the art go look at these boxes that have to be collapsed? They collapse by being torn apart, and then saying, well, that, there you have more than 180 degree side panels, but the collapsing isn't done all with everything put together, as is called out in the claim.
I still don't understand where the reversible error is, other than in a poorly worded opinion.
Other than that, there's no teaching suggestion to make that to combine those two the references that they combine. Dr. Shina said that you can do it based on, and he agreed that the description that the Blanca device would provide better path loads, would provide stronger structure, but he doesn't say that one with ordinary skill in the art would take a box.
But why not? If it works better in a completely clear, apparent way, why isn't that enough motivation right there? It's stronger.
That's an end product. It doesn't tell you how to get there. Because the way they approach that, I mean, in any house, and if you look at the Heath and...
What are you saying was lacking? The idea? I mean, what are you saying was the idea of coming up with this, the idea of trying to... If you start with the problem that you want greater strength or rigidity...
Yes.
Are you saying that was invented because nobody would have realized that you wanted more strength rigidity?
No, the pet carriers or any of these cages before, they would, like Heath, for example, would have a straight up and down sides. Those things have, the sides act as columns with a roof on top. The end panels do not do anything to cooperate with the roof panel in terms of stability. This claimed invention has the end panels that come up, and then they hold up the roof, because at the second position, when it comes up over 180 degrees, it has a tendency to bias and open them up. And
what are you saying was lacking in the prior art? A motivation?
Yes,
to
a teaching suggestion motivation.
Why is it an inherent motivation that the prior art product could be greatly improved, i.e. made much stronger by the arrangement of the hinges and angles?
Well, the connected, all the panels being connected the way they have, and the function that they achieve that way, that no one, at least Heath and Minetti, both of those require that you tear them apart. They may have, before you can get there, they didn't show how you could do that. Their collapsing would have to, it requires tearing apart of the entire box in terms of a pet.
So is what was novel here how to do it, or that it should be done?
What is novel here is that arrangement of all these panels arranged together with hinges to achieve something that can collapse and then be flipped open and held up with the end panels and in cooperation with the roof panels after the after it has been sprung up. There's no, like I said, the roof panel what was considered the roof panel in the Ethan Menetti's inventions were the top of the boxes, and they were separated out in order to collapse.
Right, you said that before. Why don't you save the few seconds you have left for your rebuttal?
Thank you.
Mr. Grossman?
Yes. Good morning, may I please support? My name is Steve Grossman, and with me this morning is Beth Belt, my associate on the brief. Your Honor, I'll begin with a point you made from the bench, which is that clearly the Patent Office has the authority by statute to proceed with this interference, and what the appellant has been objecting to is the procedure that the USPTO office used. But one point with regards to all of those questions is, that may have been missed, is that there was never an objection to this procedure below. Opponent had a clear opportunity to object to this argument that procedurally he did not satisfy the good cause standard and did not do so. And we pointed that out in our brief that his citation to the record preserving that objection was not directed to an objection under 41202. My opponent raised a new argument in his reply brief that it was impossible to do so. As this court knows very well, new arguments raised in reply brief should be barred. So it is our position, regardless of all the questions, that this matter was never raised below and is not properly before
this court. But I may have it wrong, but I understood the answer from the other side to be that if they disagree with the board allowing the interference to proceed, the only option available to them would have been an interlocutory appeal.
Your Honor, I disagree with that. Under the provisions of the interference rules, specifically 121, my opponent could have brought any motion he desired at the time to challenge the board's ruling that there was good cause and sufficient evidence to proceed. There was nothing blocking him from doing that. Under the interference procedures, again, 41-121, any miscellaneous motion could have been brought and the objection could have been made. And the objection was not made below. So I do not buy the argument that it was impossible to raise this matter before the board.
So is your whole response to Mr. Pizarro's first argument of his two main arguments waived in the story?
Well, I have certainly, that's my principal argument. My second argument is that, as you pointed out, Your Honor, this was a procedural issue, not a substantive issue. The Patent Office was substantively empowered.
Well, is there some case holding that violations of procedural rules in the PTO never have any consequences?
No, the standard, Your Honor, is that the USPTO's interpretations of its regulations is entitled to substantial deference. And this was a discretionary decision by the USPTO. And under the Eli Lilly case, which we cited, which we actually did cite in our brief because it came up in the reply, an agency's interpretations of its own regulations is entitled to substantial deference.
So
in our view, the USPTO's decision here and its discretion to go forward is entitled to deference.
But even giving deference, we sometimes reverse.
I understand that. But
why is that not appropriate here?
Why is it not appropriate?
To reverse even after giving heavy deference to the PTO's application and interpretation of its own procedural rule.
Because I think at its core, the USPTO correctly decided those rules. The USPTO, in its decision to allow me to produce additional evidence, was extremely mindful of the requirements of 41202, which to ensure harassment in an application for interference of a junior party submitting a request for an interference without evidence. And the USPTO articulated in its ruling factually that they had changed account, okay, and therefore any evidence that I had previously provided would not have been relevant to the count. And number two, they indicated that they were mindful of harassment and they found that my request for senior party status was not wholly unreasonable. So I believe, substantively, with respect to the procedures, the USPTO acted in accordance with the rules. And I believe they were correct, and they exercised sound discretion.
In which case, you don't need any difference.
That's right.
The merits.
I believe on the merits their decision was correct as well. But what I was getting to earlier was this was never raised below. And the USPTO was never made aware of this position so that they could have addressed it. And now I do not believe it's properly before this court.
And then do you have a separate response on the obviousness argument?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. The standard for review on the obviousness is whether or not there was substantial evidence in the record. According to our briefs, as we pointed out, the only evidence from the vantage point of one of ordinary skill in the art was provided by us, by Dr. Sheen. He pointed out that given that the Beard reference would show a box with hinges, as this bench just mentioned a few moments ago, in all the indicated locations, was known, and that barn-like roofs were known with sloping walls, it would have been an ordinary and expected manner for one of ordinary skill in the art to make the modification and angle in the walls. Now, Judge Prost asked a question about the USPTO shorthand, about barn-like shape. The barn-like shape was the USPTO's, I believe, accurate shorthand for the limitation of the claim that simply recited, in more words than barn-like shape, that the walls were angled inwardly.
But did the board did not identify any prior art reference that disclosed the hinge connection between the first and second positions?
I believe the exact placement of the hinges was present in the reference of Heath. And then the Heath reference showed the exact same invention as...
But not about more than 180 degrees.
Yes, it did.
Not in the position we're talking about in the invention.
As a matter of fact, it did, Your Honor. It showed the Heath invention showed the hinges all in an angled position.
Is Heath the square or the rectangle? Or
no, Heath is...
Heath is the bar.
Heath is the one that...
This is 64 joint appendix.
Okay. So, in answer to Judge Michael's question, the only evidence from the vantage point of one of ordinary skill in the art was provided by Dr. Sheena, who said that given the Beard reference that had straight walls, and given the Heath reference that showed angled walls, one of ordinary skill in the art would have predicted and expected that all of the advantages and the structural enhancements would have been obvious to one of ordinary skill in the art. That was undisputed. So, mindful of the standard, substantial evidence, I believe the board had not only substantial evidence, they had undisputed evidence from the vantage point of one of ordinary skill in the art on the issue of obviousness.
But ultimately, obviousness is needed.
Certainly. But the evidence, certainly it's factually driven, but the only evidence the board had to reach that legal conclusion was provided by our side, by Dr. Sheena, that one of ordinary skill in the art would have considered an ordinary and predictable result.
And they had no contrary.
They had no evidence whatsoever to conflict or contrast or dispute the testimony of Dr. Sheena. And that's why I believe the decision below should be sustained on the obviousness of the question.
Anything further?
No, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Pizarro, I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the procedural method is not a simple, as I read it. My interpretation is that it's a jurisdictional matter, and that sort of thing, whether they can entertain something is a jurisdictional issue, and that can be raised at any time. Also, the procedure was that the patentee here was not allowed to enter anything until after the board had made its decision. Whether this thing, whether they had met good cause or all of them. And that, at that point, we were already way far into the...
Why did you put on an expert with regard to the obvious?
Because Dr. Scheinman's position was supported what we had argued, and that is that the panels, when they folded in, when they went from the less than 90 degrees position to the over 90 degrees position, would create a more stable situation. It does produce a toggling effect that once you go over that 90 degree position.
Yeah, but the essence of his testimony is that he thought that one skilled in the art would have been obvious to one skilled.
I think his testimony, the essence of his testimony was that he, when an ordinary skill in the art could make that, but the only reason they could make that was because Pivanka showed it. Pivanka came up with it. He said, and he also said that, well, anybody with ordinary skill can make a barn-shaped structure with panels.
He didn't testify that he was relying on Pivanka. He cited two other references.
Well, but
Heath and I forget the name of the others. He wasn't saying, oh, I'm resting on Pivanka's disclosure. Come on.
Well, Heath and Minetti are showing these slope roofs with a top, flat top. The barn-shaped could be made by with a fabric structure, with an inflatable structure, and you could argue that they all collapse. So, I mean, that sort of broad definition of the invention ignoring what the actual claim language was, I think is improper in that that would allow you to make anything.
There's no question that the board has to follow the claim language. That's the bedrock of interference proceeding. The claim language gets reduced to a count, and then the count is the metric against which all the evidence is judged. And I think it's almost preposterous to suggest that the board didn't know that, and they didn't really look at the claim language, and they actually thought the invention was something other than what the claim language sets forth.
But in meeting the references must meet the claim language.
Of course.
Yeah. And so the thing is that the Heath and Minetti, which are cardboard boxes, do not meet the claim limitations. Because they don't fold the same way, and they're not.
Yeah, but I thought that the argument on the other side, and indeed almost any reading of Dr. Sheehan's testimony, is that in view of those references, it would be very readily apparent exactly what would happen if you use this change in angle in a barn-shaped structure hinged on the sides. And if that's right, it seems to me that's entirely in line with KSR, and lots of other law for that matter. You seem to be saying if it isn't explicitly shown, if every limitation isn't explicitly shown in one reference or another, there can never be obviousness.
I'm not arguing for a rigid application of the teaching, suggestion, motivation rule. I'm just saying that...
No, even assuming they can be combined, you seem to say every limitation has to be shown in one or another prior art reference.
No, I'm not saying that. That would be a 102 argument. This is 103. The thing is that the reason that Heath and Minetti, the cardboard boxes, approached things the way they did was because they did not know how to collapse them. I would imagine they did not know how to collapse them because it would have been advantageous for them to not have to require people to separate the boxes out.
All right. Thank you both. We'll take the appeal under advisement.